Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLachlan. Jay McLachlan is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLachlan and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLachlan stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLachlan's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLachlan's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern, and the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLachlan, and so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLachlan is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20, capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital ZIBBY20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal stripe sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLachlan. Thanks so much.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. If you like this podcast, you will love my new anthology called Moms Don't Have Time to Have Kids. Check it out, and you'll hear from 49 authors about all sorts of things moms don't have time to do. All the authors have been on this podcast. Also, check out my TikTok, at With Zibby and Tracy, my other podcast, Sex Talk with Zibby and Tracy. Check out Moms Don't Have Time to Write on Medium. And of course, my new publishing company called Zibby Books. And now back to our daily author interview site and a quick hello from some of my kids.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello. Enjoy the show. If you like this podcast, you will love my new anthology called Moms Don't Have Time to Have Kids. Here's a little snippet by one of the authors from the anthology.
Hi, my name is Melissa Schultz, and I'm thrilled to have contributed to Moms Don't Have Time to Have Kids. My essay is called Sunlight Through an Angled Window, and what I really don't have time for is doing nothing. Still, I try to do a little nothing every day.
Dr. Inger Burnett Ziegler is the author of Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen, The Emotional Lives of Black Women. Dr. Burnett Ziegler is a licensed clinical psychologist and associate professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at the Feinberg School of Medicine at Northwestern University. She has 2 decades of clinical experience helping people with stress, trauma, mood, and anxiety conditions, and interpersonal strain. In her clinical practice, she promotes holistic wellness through mindfulness and compassionate self-care. Inger's scholarly work focuses on the role that social determinants of health play in mental illness and treatment, particularly in the Black community. She is an advocate for normalizing participation in mental health treatment and assuring that all individuals have access to high-quality, evidence-based mental health care. Inger has written dozens of articles and other publications on trauma and mental health in the Black community and lectures widely on research about barriers to access and engagement in mental health treatment, mindfulness, and strategies to improve mental health treatment participation and outcomes. She is an active contributor to the public discourse on mental health, and she has been featured in the New York Times, Time Magazine, and the Chicago Tribune. She received her undergraduate degree in psychology from Cornell University, her doctorate in clinical psychology from Northwestern University, and completed a postdoc fellowship at the VA Ann Arbor University of Michigan. She is a proud, lifelong Chicagoan.
Welcome, Inger. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen, The Emotional Lives of Black Women.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. So can you tell listeners a little bit about what the book is about and what inspired you to write it? When did you decide you wanted to do this, the process behind it, all of that? And then I want to talk about your own family, if you don't mind.
Sure. So the book really grew out of an article that I wrote in 2018 for the New York Times called The Strong and Stressed Black Woman. And in that article, I talk about a woman that I was working with in therapy, and I talk about my grandmother and the many strengths that they had, kind of the achievements that they had accomplished in their lifetimes, both being professional and raising families and also simultaneously dealing with trauma that had not been addressed, and that trauma having a really significant impact on not only their physical health, but also their mental health. And so that was really the seed of the book. This book, Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen, is an integration of personal stories of friends and family, as well as clients that I've worked with in therapy, and really showing how they present themselves to the outside world, that strength, that resilience, that grit, tenacity that allows them to kind of push through and overcome everyday challenges, but also all of those other things that lie kind of beneath the surface, the stress, the trauma, pregnancy trauma, childhood trauma, relationship trauma. And so along with those stories, there is an integration of research about various mental health conditions, as well as clinical coping strategies for how to deal with stress and trauma and live a healthier life.
Which, by the way, like everyone in the universe could use right about now. I feel
that's
like,
right.
like really great tips. I mean, this is the most stressful environment. I feel like this pandemic, anyway, so widely applicable
Indeed.
Advice and actionable steps, which is always fantastic. You know, it's so funny. I don't know if you've come across this book by Jane Allen, or that's her pen name called
Black Girls. Oh, I'm familiar with it. Yes.
Yeah, Black Girls Must Die Exhausted. So her real name's Janique, and we recently did a podcast after which I was like, you have to join my team for Zibby Books. So now we work together, and we just did a Q&A for book club. And it's funny because exactly what you're saying, she decided to do in fiction, right? Like she had the same desire, the same goal of like, there was all this stress and she was like, just so everybody's so tired. It was just so much to hold on to. And she decided to approach it with fiction, and you've decided to go at it more with studies and with your experience. And yet you're like coming at two sides of the same coin. And
sure.
As a reader, there are just like different ways you can immerse yourself in a, you know, fictitious person's lived experience. We can hear about your experience. You can report on it. So it's just, it's sort of a nice compliment to get like this, sure. like 360, like feeling of what it's like, because, you know, nobody reading, you know, we all have different experiences in life. And like, I want to hear what it's like for everybody and for you, and what it's specifically like for Black women, which you, I mean, this is like a handbook, right? You're like, I get you. I hear you. This is all about us. This is what I want to tell you. Read it, learn from it. Like, here you go. So I, in parts, I felt like, well, I'm sorry, I'm just going to read it too. You know, obviously I'm not Black, but you know, I'm sorry. Like, I'm not your target audience, but I found it so interesting and informative, and you know, we're all women, you know what I mean? Like there's still so many commonalities, and yet the differences are so important to learn about and hear about. And, you know, without, anyway, I'm rambling. I'm sorry. Let me let you talk.
No, I appreciate you saying that. And indeed, the target audience was for Black women, but I do think it's, you know, widely applicable to women, to anyone who has experienced, you know, stress, depression, anxiety, for mental health professionals, for those who are supporting women or others that are struggling day to day. And so, you know, I really appreciate you saying that. And I couldn't agree more in terms of, you know, the ways that fiction is approaching this same topic. When I was writing, I deeply immersed myself in other fiction that was addressing some of the same issues around Black women. Queenie is a book that's coming to the top of my mind. And so I loved the way that, you know, fiction can tell stories. And although these are, you know, not real stories, they're still about, you know, real experiences. And that's something that I really wanted to channel in the book as well, because I think that that's what really helps people to relate and to feel seen, as you said.
Well, while you're both out promoting your books, you should do an event or something together.
Yeah,
that's my 2 cents there.
No, that would be great. I've been following, you know, the success of her book, and you know, really appreciate the work that she's doing as well. So I definitely
All right, I'll put you in touch afterwards. Okay, yeah, but back to your book now. There is this one section. So you wrote a lot about your family, your mom, your grandmother, like all of it, even beyond that, how everybody sort of came to be. And you wrote about it in a beautiful way too. So I don't know. I just really love this one passage. I'll read the paragraph before it too, but which is more statistics. And this is an example of how you meld, you know, statistics and research with honestly more like literary writing and at the same time. So you said, eventually when she was more than 50 years old, grandma moved out of public housing and returned to school through a program offered by her employer to earn her bachelor's degree at Roosevelt University. At the time, only 8% of Black women in the United States had a college education, which by the way, I could not believe that number. I just couldn't. Anyway, in the early 1970s, when predatory lending, redlining, and restrictive covenants were rampant in Chicago, she purchased a ranch house facing the train tracks of the previously Dutch community of Roseland. White flight was at its peak as Black folks rapidly began to occupy the neighborhood. With every visit I made to Grandma's house, she planted the seeds of my self-worth and willed to me her expectations for greatness. They were steeped in the Lipton's lemon tea that we sweetened with packs of Equal and sipped out of pink porcelain teacups. We drank and held our pinkies out while speaking in fake British accents. She and I sat in perfect manner in her ornate wooden dining room chairs, which swallowed my petite frame and left my feet dangling beneath the table. As we delicately placed the teacups down on the saucers, we pursed our lips together and fluttered our eyelids, mimicking the air that we imagined rich and important people had. "Be still and stop kicking," Grandma said, teaching me how to be proper and dignified.
That's one of my favorite passages. I'm so glad you picked that
really?
One.
Really? Oh.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Really fond memories of my grandmother, as that passage kind of shows of her teaching me how to show up in the world as a little Black girl and as a Black woman, how I should present, how I should behave, acting with, you know, dignity and respect, and more importantly, knowing that I was deserving of all of the goodness that the world had to give me, that I should kind of claim that as my birthright. So thank you for reading that passage.
Well, so amazing that she instilled that in you. I mean, that's really special.
She's a very proud woman. And, you know, in a book, I talk about her being, you know, really my first example of a strong Black woman. And she, you know, carried herself with a lot of pride. She was very kind of strong in her spiritual foundation, believed in doing things properly. And, you know, she was able to accomplish a lot in her life, kind of going back to school and having a great career and owning a home. And I talk in the book about this big blue Cadillac that she drove, which was, you know, really her pride and joy. But it, as I also mentioned, there was also so much about her life that I didn't know about until I was much older, and even more that I learned about through the process of writing this book.
So interesting. Oh my gosh. We'll see. She seems like she was a pretty awesome lady. Indeed. I hope that she's hanging out with my grandmother, you know, they think they would get along. My grandma was a piece of work. So you also identify, well, not you. I mean, it comes from, you draw attention to what Joy Degree wrote about in her 2005 book, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome. And you said that Black people experience the syndrome as adaptive survival behaviors due to generations of oppression of enslaved people and their descendants. And she suggests that patterns of behavior reflective of post-traumatic slave syndrome include poor self-esteem, feelings of hopelessness, depression, suspiciousness of negative motivation of others, propensity for anger and violence, and internalized racism. These maladaptive thoughts and behaviors originated as survival strategies in the context of slavery, followed by systemic and structural racism and oppression, and have continued to be passed down through generations long after they have lost their contextual value. And then you talk about epigenetics and all of that. So tell me about this syndrome, because people do not, this is not like a widely, this is not in the newspaper every day. Let's just say that, right? People don't use that term. And, you know, inherited trauma, yes, but it obviously applies to a lot of situations that people have experienced trauma in. So tell me a little bit more about that and the way you see that affecting things.
Sure. So, you know, she describes it and she gives this title of post-traumatic slave syndrome, but I think we really can understand it more broadly as a trauma response. Not only an individual trauma response, but an intergenerational trauma response that shows up in how we see ourselves, our self-esteem, our self-worth. It shows up in our mood and emotions, that sense of fear, that sense of being on edge, a sense of suspiciousness that something bad is going to happen that's rooted in either a direct experience with trauma or a close experience with trauma through friends or family or neighborhood environment. And it also shows up, you mentioned the next paragraph in which I talk about epigenetics by being passed down through the genes, where those who have experienced a trauma that can leave, it's suspected that that can leave an imprint on the genes that's then passed down to future generations and impacts their physical and mental health, even if they have not had their own direct exposure with a traumatic event. And I really wanted to highlight that because I think so many people that have experienced trauma, I referenced the statistic that an estimated 8 out of 10 Black women have experienced a trauma, and a fraction of that go on to have traumatic stress symptoms or PTSD, but it's unrecognized. And when it's unrecognized or unidentified, then we're more vulnerable to passing on these behaviors, passing on, you know, these thoughts about ourselves, even in our language with how we talk about ourselves and talk to our children and talk to our family members. And it's really the acknowledgement and recognition of the experience that then empowers us to be able to break that cycle and alter behavior, get the support that we need in a very intentional way.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it. And that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. greenlight.com/Zibby.
Okay.
You know, I just, on my podcast It just came out yesterday, I think, although I interviewed him a while ago. There's a man named Jesse Thistle, who is an Indigenous person of Canada. And he was talking exactly about what you're saying, in that you have to have your trauma witnessed.
Yes.
And before you can get past it, it has to be acknowledged and then dealt with. But if it's just out there and nobody is addressing it, then you can't get past it. And what you're saying, it's like all, not just you, but like it ripples, right? Like if you don't get it addressed now, then you're passing it down. So there's even more urgency to like getting people to pay attention and be like, oh, I see, right? Because you're actually really affecting the mental health of all of your, I mean, there's like quite a loaded responsibility there.
Sure. And you know, avoidance is a trauma response.
Mm-hmm.
That is a symptom, a clinical symptom in and of itself. And so it's understandable that we would want to avoid thoughts and reminders of difficult, painful experiences, whether that be broadly, you know, the experience of slavery, whether it be some more close experience of abuse or domestic violence or what have you. But is that turning toward, or, you know, as us clinicians say, kind of approaching the trauma, holding space for it, acknowledging it, developing the tolerance to be able to talk about that pain rather than pushing it down and dismissing and avoiding it, that really creates the landscape for healing and to be able to move past it.
Wow. Well, you know, as I said before, a lot of people I feel like have a lot of healing to do right now in particular.
Indeed.
And this is, I think, a really good reminder that the things that fester, you know, my old therapist used to say, they'll eventually come out sideways, you know.
Yes.
They will come out in some way. So you might as well just like deal with them.
It is. And, you know, we're talking about kind of the challenge of right now, the pandemic and everything else that's, you know, been going on in the world. But the stillness that the pandemic forced upon a lot of people has been really uncomfortable for a mm-hmm. lot of folks that deal with their trauma by being busy, by being distracted, by being out and doing things, you know, all of the time. And I mean, the world is opening up a little bit now, but in that period of time when people were really forced to kind of be with themselves and not have as many, you know, other things going on as they may have typically had, that was difficult for a lot of folks, because that gives room for the thoughts that perhaps we were not paying attention to at another time.
If only they started a podcast every single day and like 57 new businesses and whatever. This is another way to do it if you
that's
are
true.
Trying to avoid all your own stuff. I'm just saying, you know, everybody has their own coping stuff.
Staying busy is definitely a common one that I think a lot of people and women for sure can relate to.
I like how a lot of you pose a lot of questions to the reader, right? Instead of just being prescriptive, like you actually, it's like, you know, hallmark of a good therapist, right? You're like asking open-ended questions and all that, right? You know, how did I receive love from my caregivers? What were my early models for intimate relationship? What wounds do I still carry from childhood or past relationships? And then you talk about, you know, the trauma bond and how all of that, you know, comes down for generations and everything. And, you know, if you want to not avoid, you can, you're like inviting people to sort of get into it here, I feel like.
All of this is an invitation. And I think that that's an important kind of concept to hold in reading the book, or if one is to go into therapy, because often there's this idea of what are they going to make me do or think about, this kind of pressure. And as a therapist, you know, it's important to go at the pace that the person that you're working with allows. So I actually had a close friend talk to me about that passage. She was reading the book, really successful, highly ambitious Black woman that has struggled in relationships. And she was saying that she read that passage and she was asking herself those questions and it got uncomfortable. But she keeps coming back to it, right? And so all of this is like planting seeds. You might notice the discomfort, move away, and then you can come back, you know, as you're ready.
Wow. So like, what is your life like when you're not helping a zillion other people in your practice and by writing books and, you know, lifting people up and all of that. What do you do when you're not working? And like, what's your story? And what do we not know from the book?
So, you know, in terms of work, I'm a practicing psychologist. Most of my effort is in research focused on mental health in the Black community. I'm also deeply involved in mental health advocacy at the city and state levels, do a lot of volunteer work with various mental health and healthcare organizations. And aside from all the mental health stuff and work stuff, I really love theater. I love the arts. I love yoga. I love health and wellness. I love restaurants and museums and hanging out with my friends.
Awesome.
I love rest. I preach rest clinically, but I like non-doing. And I think that there's a lot of benefit of just being still without having kind of a goal, if you will, attached to it that can be rejuvenating and just fulfilling when we lead otherwise quite busy lives. So that's something that I definitely like to practice for myself as much as I can.
I like that. I like that because you've given it a purpose. So now, now you've given rest something you can accomplish. Which,
Check that off. Yeah. I rested enough.
I know. Like every 2 weeks, I'm like, I should probably take a little bit of time to rest. You know, this is good for me. Okay, good. I did it. And what about writing? When did you know you wanted to turn this into a book? And do you have plans for more books? And do you like to write to like journal and just express your feelings type of writing too?
Yeah. So as a kid, I really liked journaling. As I moved into my professional career, I had lots of thoughts and opinions about many things. And my dad always said, you should write about that. You should write about that. So he really kind of planted the seed in terms of the meaningfulness that can be gained from writing. I will say in the couple years before I started working on the book, I became really intentional about writing op-eds, particularly as an academic. I thought it was really important to be able to share the knowledge that is, you know, kind of cultivated in the academic space that often doesn't get out into, you know, the general population. And so I write a lot about trauma. I write a lot about the impact of the violence in Chicago, about Black women's mental health, about, you know, social and political issues and how that is related to mental health. Now I'm still writing. I just write thoughts. I have my little notebook here, whereas ideas kind of pop up for me.
Let's see. Hold it up. Oh, I love it. There is beauty in simplicity. My teenage daughter would snatch that right out of your hands. So yeah, that's a good one.
So I like just to be kind of, you know, have a place where as thoughts come to me, I can write them and then make something, you know, more meaningful out of them later. And I noticed that that's the best process for me. And in terms of a next book, you know, right now I'm really trying to be in this moment and hold space for this book. I'm really enjoying kind of these kinds of conversations, hearing about how the book has impacted people. But I do have a little seed, and that seed is around Black women's joy. And the role of Black women's joy in our survival, in our existence in the world. So
I love that.
I definitely think it's important to give some space and attention to that as well.
Tell me about this cover.
Yeah, so this is an artist in Africa. Her name is Sangay Malenga. And I was really drawn to her work because when I read the description of her work, it was really closely aligned with what my goals were for the book. So really thinking about how Black women show up in various spaces, the ways that we're seen and not seen. And when I read that description, I was like, oh, this is the message that I'm really also trying to convey. Aside from just thinking it was beautiful, this particular piece, you know, showing the relationship between two Black women looking out, touching each other, but not looking at each other. This is what I got out of it when I looked at the piece.
It's okay. We'll do a little Rorschach test for you.
you're absolutely right. This is my Rorschach analysis of the piece, but I just loved it so much. So
I love it too. No,
she's another person I would really love to be in conversation with if the opportunity ever allowed. I think there's a lot of synergies in our work.
Interesting. Well, maybe for your next book.
Yeah.
They can be jumping up and down. Maybe they'll be smiling.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, just make these women smile a little bit. Talk about joy. I'm kidding. All right. Awesome. Do you have any advice for aspiring authors?
Oh, wow. That's the first time I've been asked that question. I will share the advice that I read and really took to heart, which is that writing is a practice that you have to do consistently. I think that there's this myth that you wait to write until the idea comes to you or the inspiration comes to you. But I really found a lot of benefit from just continuously doing and actively engaging that muscle and then worrying about the editing and making everything, you know, beautiful later. So just write, write, write.
And are you reading anything good lately? Then I'll leave you alone.
Just yeah. Wondering. So right now I'm reading Ashley Ford, Somebody's Daughter, which,
you know, I had her on this podcast.
Yeah. So I'm really loving that. Yeah. So a lot of good stuff out there, right?
Yeah. There is a lot of great stuff out there. Okay. Amazing. Well, it was so nice to get to know you, and I'll put you in touch with Janique, and yeah, thank you so much. And thanks for, you know, letting me sort of be the interloper in this book. That wasn't intended for me, but I learned a lot and I loved it. So congratulations.
I appreciate it so much. Thank you for having me.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.